Galloway.
God, Mr. Speaker, for the erudition and historical memory of the last three speeches, almost entirely absent in the Prime Minister's initial address. He was clearly making a speech which was not the one he intended to make here this afternoon. Otherwise, he would not have persuaded you at vast public expense to recall the House of Commons to decide that we're actually going to decide on this matter next week or the week after, when we're back here in any case. It's absolutely evident that if it were not for the democratic revolt which has been underway in this House of Commons and outside in the wider public against this war, that the engines in Cyprus would now be revving and the cruise missiles ready to fly this very weekend. And any attempt by the Prime Minister to pretend that he had always, all along, intended on this course of action is just bunkum. And the reason for the unease here on both sides of the House, two exceptional speeches from the last speaker and the member from New Forest East, encompass the feelings of the people in the country. Only 11% of the public, according to the Daily Telegraph this morning, support Britain becoming involved in a war in Syria. Can ever a British government have imagined sending its men and women to war with the support of just 11% in public opinion? First, that there is no compelling evidence, to use the Leader of the Opposition's words, that the Assad regime is responsible for this crime yet. Not that they're not bad enough to do it, Mr. Speaker. Everybody knows they're bad enough to do it. The question is, are they mad enough to do it? To launch a chemical weapons attack in Damascus on the very day that a United Nations chemical weapons inspection team arrives in Damascus must be a new definition of madness. And of course, if he is that mad, how mad is he going to be once we've launched a blizzard of Tomahawk cruise missiles upon his country? Now, as I heard the front benches describe how bad he was, I wonder just why the former Prime Minister forced Her Majesty to billet him in her guest room at Buckingham Palace just a few years ago, and how a former Prime Minister recommended him for an honour, and how he was hailed in all corners as a moderniser. But of course, the narrative has changed because the government is intent on regime change in Damascus, which brings me to the only other point I'm going to be able to make in the time available. The reason for the unease is that people can see the character of the Syrian opposition. They have seen the videos. We've heard about horrific videos. Take a look at the video of one of the commanders of the Syrian revolution cutting open the chest of a human being and eating his heart and liver and videotaping himself and putting it up on YouTube because he thought it might be considered attractive. Take a look at the videos of Christian priests having their heads sawn off, not chopped off, sawn off with bread knives. Even a bishop in the Christian church was murdered by these people. Every religious minority in Syria, and there are 23 of those, is petrified at the victory of the Syrian rebels that the British Prime Minister and Foreign Secretary have been doing their utmost to supply with weapons and money these last 2 years, and they cannot deny it. They say it's now about this crime, whoever committed it. But it's been the government's policy for 2 years to bring about the defeat of the regime in Damascus and the victory of the kind of people responsible for these crimes. I have 20 seconds left. Willingly.
If only for another 60 seconds. Remember, the honourable member had made reference, but let's remember where those arms have come from over decades from this country's supply to Syria.
Indeed, indeed. I have now 60 seconds at my disposal, so let me make this point more clearly. When did Russia and China, 2.5 billion people, cease to be members of the international community? Who are you on the other side to decide what the international community thinks should do? If you're unable to persuade the Security Council to go along with your point of view, who are you to decide that you will launch a war in any case? I keep hearing about the unreasonable use of the veto. I've heard that many times over the last few years in this House. The United States has vetoed every attempt to obtain justice for the Palestinian people and to punish and issue retribution for international law-breaking on the part of Israel, and nobody in this House has said one word about it. Yes, I give way.
I'm very grateful for the honourable member for giving way to me. Mr. Speaker, I think you would be very interested to know that I've had several constituents email me about comments made by the honourable member for Bradford West on Iranian Press TV, in which my constituent claims that the honourable member said that Israel supplied the chemical for the attacks in Syria. I would find that very hard to believe that the honourable member said that. So would he like to take this opportunity to refute that or provide the evidence to satisfy my constituent?
Well, it just shows the unreliability of relying upon green ink letters, whether they come in the post or in emails. For I said no such thing. But the Syrian rebels definitely had sarin gas, because they were caught with it by the Turkish government, as was referred to by the former government minister opposite. If you'll forgive me, I forget his constituents. See, the truth is this. I know mine. It's where I gave you such a bloody good hiding just over a year ago. The Syrian rebels have got plenty of access to sarin. It's not rocket science, Mr. Speaker. A group of Shinto obscurantists in Japan living on Mount Fuji poisoned the Tokyo underground with sarin gas less than 20 years ago. You don't have to be Einstein to have your hands on sarin gas or the means to distribute it. Russia and China say no to war. So do I and most people in this country.
Mr. Andrew Mitchell.